In our previous discussion, I made a suggestion about who the two olive trees are that provide oil to the menorah. And this, as you can see in this representation, found, I believe it was in the synagogue, an ancient synagogue. And I suggested that they are the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And just as Yahshua provides light to grow his olive trees, we are to be fruitful in order to provide the oil that will glorify his light to the nations. In discussing the two anointed ones, as referenced in Zechariah 4:14, so he said, "These are the two anointed ones who stand beside the sovereign of the whole earth." In reference to that, we examined Zechariah 3, verse 8, and found that the name of the Messiah was revealed here. And this is significant, not simply for the fact that the Messiah's name is revealed, but that it is preparation for our understanding of Zechariah 4:14. So let's go to Zechariah 3, verse 8, where it says, "Hear, O Yahshua, the high priest, you and your companions who sit before you, for they are a wondrous sign. For behold, I am bringing forth my servant, the branch." Yahshua's name is further revealed. Of course, in our textbooks, we read Joshua in this place. But it's pronounced Yahshua. His name is further revealed as a second witness in Zechariah 6. Two chapters after the verses we're looking at, Zechariah 6 in verse 11 and 12, where it says, "Take the silver and gold, make an elaborate crown, and set it on the head of Yahshua." Joshua, which means the salvation of Yahweh. "The son of Yahtzadik," which means Yahweh the righteous. Okay? "The high priest," still referring to Yahshua. "Then speak to him, saying, thus says Yahweh of hosts, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch." He's literally speaking the name of Yahshua, the branch. Why the branch? This is explained in the next verse. Oops, went too fast here. Okay. "From his place he shall branch out, and he shall build the temple of Yahweh." Yes, he shall build the temple of Yahweh. "He shall bear the glory and shall sit and rule on his throne. In this manner he shall be a priest on his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both." Yahshua will rule as the righteous king and the high priest. Last time we also asked, by what law will the righteous king rule? And on what days will the high priest lead worship? Will the king abide by the doctrines of the Roman Catholic Church, or in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States? Will the high priest heed the advice of Mormon prophets, or burn incense and bow down to images of deceased family members? Consider how ludicrous this would be, how utterly unimaginable. Shouldn't we be obedient to the righteous king here and now? Shouldn't we worship Almighty Yahweh according to his will, according to his ways, according to how his Messiah worshiped him? How severe will be our punishment if we reject Yahweh and his Messiah? In Hebrews 10:26, we read exactly what this is going to be like. "For if we sin willfully After we have received the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a certain fearful expectation of judgment and fiery indignation, which will devour the adversaries. And those adversaries are those who reject Yahweh and his Messiah. Verse 28, anyone who has rejected Moses' law, in other words, the law of Yahweh, dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. Of how much worse punishment do you suppose will he be thought worthy who has trampled the Son of Yahweh underfoot, counted the blood of the covenant, Yahshua's blood, by which he was sanctified, a common thing, and insulted the Spirit of grace? So we hear a lot about grace today and not much about law. Willfully transgressing the law of Yahweh is an insult to the Spirit of grace. In 1 Corinthians, Paul uses Israel in the wilderness as an example of what will happen today if we reject Yahweh, for we are still Israel, Yahweh's special treasure. We are the lost sheep of the house of Israel. We are Ephraim. And Yahweh will unite us with our brethren, the house of Judah. Why did Yahshua come? He came to bring the prodigal son, Ephraim, and the son who stayed home, Judah, to righteousness. What will Yahshua do when he returns? He will then restore all of Israel to the Father. Hence, both olive trees will provide the oil of fruitfulness to the Messiah, that his light might shine forever and ever. Both houses will honor the law of Yahweh and his Messiah. Shema Yisrael, Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Echad. Hear, O Israel. Hear and do, O Israel. Yahweh, our Elohim. Yahweh is one. As Yahshua testifies in John 17, begin at verse 21. And the glory which you gave me, this is Yahshua speaking, I have given them, his disciples, that they may be one, echad, just as we are one, echad. I in them, and you in me, that they may be made perfect in one. How shall we be made perfect in oneness, that is, in unity? Paul uses Israel in the wilderness as an example of what not to do. In 1 Corinthians 10, beginning at verse 5, we read, but with most of them, speaking of Israel, Yahweh was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as some of them. In other words, do not take up the ways of the nations. That's what idolatry means there. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and rose up to play. And that word play there does not mean a game of volleyball. What it means is to mock Yahweh through pagan worship, through following the ways of the nations. And Paul concludes this theme, this idea of an example in Corinthians 10, verse 11. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. There's not one verse in the New Testament, in the Brit Chadashah, that even suggests that we reject Yahweh's laws, statutes, commandments, Sabbaths, or feasts. In fact, the New Testament, as Paul's statement above reflects, teaches us obedience to the law of Yahweh. Sin is the transgression of Yahweh's law. It is rebelling against his teaching, and it is a dismissal of his Torah. My friends, this is the unforgivable sin against the Holy Spirit of Yahweh. To teach that his law is dead and that we are no longer held accountable to his instruction. And I'm speaking to you who would teach the Bible to others. If you are not teaching from the Torah, the prophets, and the writings, and applying these to the evangel of Yahweh and his son Yahshua, as it is written in the New Testament, then may I say to you, in fear and trembling for your souls, that you are in grave danger. For Satan has deceived the whole world, including you and me. So I say, fear Yahweh, for it is our adherence to his instruction that will make us wise and worthy to be redeemed. It is his word that will enable us to produce good fruit. Yahshua paid the price for our salvation. So we could say that we've been saved, but he will not come back to redeem rotten fruit. We also learned last time that these verses in Zechariah were referenced in the New Testament, in the Brit Chadashah. In fact, just to drive the point home, the New Testament is in fact a confirmation, a fulfilling, not a fulfillment, of the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. Now, do you remember our discussion in talking about the two tenses in Hebrew? We have three tenses in English, the past, the present, and the future. But there are only two tenses in Hebrew. Either something is completed with nothing more to do, as in eternal death, or something is in process of being completed, as Yahshua came to fulfill the words of Yahweh. He did not end it. He is saying to us that it has to continue until the very end. In Zechariah 6, verse 12, is recorded, Yahshua shall build the temple of Yahweh. So I ask, are we who believe and follow Yahshua not the temple being spoken of here? In 1 Peter 2, beginning at verse 4, we read, coming to him, that is coming to Yahshua, as a living stone, rejected indeed by men, but chosen by Yahweh and precious. And the word precious is a reference to Israel. You also, as living stones, are being built up a spiritual house, the temple of Yahweh, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to Yahweh through Yahshua Messiah. In our last discussion, we also considered the question, are we as a nation in trouble? A nation of the people, by the people, and for the people. In this sense, our Declaration of Independence is a declaration of separation from Yahweh. Should we not be a nation of Yahweh, by Yahweh, and for Yahweh? Well, certainly we should. Yahweh tells us so in 2 Chronicles 7:13 and 14. When I shut up heaven and there is no rain, or command the locusts to devour the land, or send pestilence among my people, if my people who are called by my name, who are under my authority, in other words, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn. And that word turn there is the Hebrew word shub, which means literally return to me and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land. Can you hear the condition here? If my people turn from the wicked ways, then I will hear and forgive. To be redeemed as a nation, we must become Israel. Not the state of Israel over in the Middle East, but the Israel that was called out of Babylon, that was rescued from Egypt. The Israel that will be called out from all of the nations at the return of the Messiah. This is the redemption, and to be worthy of qualifying for one of Yahweh's own, we must refrain from idolatry. We must stop worshiping Yahweh according to the doctrines of demons, the ways that the heathen worshiped their gods. Let us cease from honoring the annual day of rebirth of the sun god, 4 days after the winter solstice. Let us cease from the 40 days of weeping for Tammuz, the son of the sun god. And let us cease from honoring Ishtar, Easter, at the time of the spring equinox. Let us cease worship on the day of Baal Peor, the Lord of the Opening, a literal reference to the sexual immorality of pagan worship, and a figurative reference to Israel committing adultery by abandoning Yahweh and taking up the ways of the Gentiles. These are the wicked ways Yahweh is asking us to turn away from in humility and shame and return to his ways. Jeremiah 6, beginning at verse 16, we read, "Thus says Yahweh, stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths, where the good way is, and walk in it. Then you will find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it. Also, I set watchmen over you, saying, listen to the sound of the trumpet. But they said, we will not listen. Therefore, hear, O nations, and know, O congregation, O assembly, O church, what is among them. Hear, O earth. Behold, I will certainly bring calamity on this people, the fruit of their thoughts, because they have not heeded my words nor my law, but rejected it." In our last discussion, we also discussed the verse that's being used for this year's Feast of Tabernacles, verse 14 of Zechariah 4. But let's read it in context, beginning at verse 1. Zechariah 4, beginning at verse 1. "Now the angel who talked with me came back and wakened me as a man who was wakened out of his sleep. And he said to me, what do you see? And so I said, I am looking, and there is a menorah of solid gold with a bowl on top of it. And on the stand, seven lamps with seven pipes to the seven lamps. Two olive trees are by it, one at the right of the bowl and the other at its left. So I answered and spoke to the angel who talked with me, saying, what are these, my master, my sovereign?" Zechariah 4, verse 5. "Then the angel who talked with me answered and said to me, do you not know what these are? And I said, no, my master. So he answered and said to me, this is the word of Yahweh to Zerubbabel. Not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says Yahweh of hosts. Who are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel you shall become a plain, and he shall bring forth the capstone, which with shouts of grace, grace to it. Verse 8, "Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this temple. His hands shall also finish it. Then you will know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me to you. For who has despised the day of small things? For these seven rejoice to see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel. They are the eyes of Yahweh, which scan to and fro throughout the whole earth. So I ask you, is it a coincidence that the name of Zerubbabel means from or coming out of Babylon? Zerubbabel. Revelation 18, verse 1. After these things, I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen. Now, the word fallen there means landed, not destroyed, and has become a dwelling place of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. Now, let me say something about that. If we were going to find this dwelling place of demons, those who worship on the day of Baal Peor, who worship on the day of the sun deities, where would we be looking? Would we not be looking in the buildings which house those who worship this way? Are these not those prisons for every foul spirit? And are those places not a cage for every unclean and hated bird? Verse 3. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. And verses 4 and 5. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people. Come out of Babylon, Zerubbabel. Lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and Yahweh has remembered her iniquities. The word remembered there is a key word in Hebrew, because it does not mean call to mind. It doesn't mean that Yahweh, oh yeah, they did this. No, it means he's acting. Normally you would say acting in behalf. He's acting in behalf of himself against those who sin, who transgress the law of Yahweh. Now, when I read in verse 9 of Zechariah 4, which reads, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this temple. His hands shall also finish it. I hear it saying, due to his name, the works of those who have come out of Babylon have laid the foundation of this temple, and their works shall also finish it. Who are they who have come out of Babylon? It is those who have rejected pagan ways and have turned and have gone back to Yahweh. There are also those who understand the purpose of the Messiah's coming. Ephesians 2, verses 8 through 10, for by grace you have been saved through faith. And that not of yourselves, and parenthetically, Paul says, it is the gift of Yahweh, not of works, lest anyone should boast. Then he says in verse 10, for we are his workmanship, created in Messiah Yahshua for good works, which Yahweh prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Paul is not contradicting himself. He likes to use paraphrases to clarify things. But people have taken that paraphrase and have made a whole doctrine around it, saying that we don't have to do the works. that Yahweh asks us to do. No, that's incorrect. We are created in Messiah Yahshua for good works. Paul is, he's not contradicting himself here. He's saying that works alone does not bring salvation. That's true. We can't save ourselves by simply obeying the law of Yahweh. That can only be accomplished with a perfect sacrifice, which Yahshua, of his own volition, offered in our place, that we might be justified to stand before Yahweh. He is upholding, this is Paul, is upholding our responsibility to adhere to walk in the law of Yahweh, referred to here as good works. Zechariah 4:11-13. Then I answered and said to him, "What are these two olive trees at the right of the menorah and at its left?" And I further answered and said to him, "What are these two olive branches that drip into the receptacles of the two gold pipes from which the golden oil drains?" Then he answered me and said, "Do you not know what these are?" And I said, "No, my master." So he said, "These are the two anointed ones who stand beside the sovereign of the whole earth." And so I ask, is it becoming clearer about who the two olive trees are and who is represented by the menorah? When we meet again, we will continue in Zechariah 4 to see what more truth is revealed. Hallelujah.